numbers told the story, they always do.
One of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Friday morning to you. It is a numbers game. VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. It is Gil Alexander, Matt Santos in the house for one more day, filling in for Kelly Midland-Bidlin. How you doing, Matt? You
doing
good?
Great, Gil. How you doing, man?
We really appreciate you being here. It's great to see you again.
After of course, man. Glad to be here.
A previous 2 month stint here on the show back in the day. It is loaded today. Courtesy of Matt and everybody who put this show together. Dr. Bob will be here to give college football picks, the great Bob Stoll. Paul Carr, Premier League picks as well. Adam Burke with NFL and college football picks. Chris Valica talks NFL with us and college football, of course. Spanky will be in the house. Spanky will join us the final two segments of the show today. He is in town, the founder of Spank Odds. We'll talk about Spank Odds. We'll talk about what a day in his life betting looks like. He will be in studio with us later on in the show. Always great to be on a numbers game, just have people roll through. That's the most fun part about doing this. And so we're honored to have all those guests on. We start, of course, with the ball game last night in Cincinnati between the Dolphins and the Bengals. By the way, we'll give Survivor thoughts. I got Survivor thoughts. Teaser thoughts today on the show, of course, in the National Football League. What I'm going to end up playing in the contest, I think, more solidified as well. But last night, Miami at Cincinnati, a game that, needless to say, was marred by a real tough, gruesome injury to Tua Tagovailoa and a real concerning injury. Cincinnati gets it done. Bengals win it 27-15, a game that the Bengals, early season-wise, absolutely had to have. If they lose, they fall to 1-3. And the Dolphins, in what you know most people were saying all week long, the narrative was, oh, it's a terrible spot for the Dolphins for multiple reasons. I won't get into those again, but you know all of them, beginning with, hey, they played 90 plays on defense against the Bills. And in the end, the Bengals do prevail, 27-15. They cover the spread. What percentage of entries do you think, Matt, off the top of your head? We don't know because Circa doesn't provide these till after they put out the full thing on Saturday afternoon. What percentage of entries do you think went with the Bengals last night in Survivor? I wonder.
In Survivor?
Yeah.
Maybe 5%?
I'll go a little higher than that. I'm going to say 8%. But I think it's a non-negligible amount of people. I think a lot of people probably went with the Bengals, and good on them. For those who did, congratulations to you. I did not. We'll go back to Tua in a minute, but as far as the details of the game, it felt for a moment we were watching a game in a different era. First of all, Miami 4th and 4th, the Cincinnati 5 with 6:09 left in the first quarter. They're down 7-0 already at this point. So 4th and 4th, the Cincinnati 5, they opt for Jason Sanders' 23-yard field goal, and you're like, oh, okay. I mean, I guess 4th and 4, not an absolute go for it situation, but in this day and age, you might have expected them to. They opt for the chip shot, 23-yard field goal, 7-3. Bengals at that point. By the way, two plays before that, Chase Edmonds just straight up dropped it to a Tagovailoa pass, 11-yard touchdown would have been. So they had to settle for that field goal, or they chose to settle for the field goal anyway on 4th down. Then Cincinnati, 4th and 1. At the Miami 24, with 10:45 left in the second quarter, they're still up 7-3. They decide to go for it. They go for it there, and they fail on a pitch to Mixon, because whenever you're 4th and 1, you really want to do the pitch out. And Mixon fails to get to the line of scrimmage. 9 plays later, Sanders 48-yard field goal at 7-6. We're still in the first half. Miami 2nd and 7 at the Cincinnati 40. 5:57 left in the second quarter, in a 7-3 game, and this is where Tua fails to elude Josh Tupua and gets slammed to the turf. Couple things. Were you surprised, before you even knew there was an injury, were you surprised there was not a flag thrown on that? I was a little.
Were you?
Yeah, in this day and age, I was like, oh, that could have been a flag. It wasn't, though. And I'm not playing the result. I was like, oh, that's interesting that there wasn't a flag. I didn't hear much uproar about that. Maybe I'm wrong. But that was the play that changed the game. Again, we'll bookmark the Tua thing. We'll get to that because it deserves more gravitas after this. But we'll continue with the details of the game. Two plays after Tua forced to leave. 4th and 1 at the Cincinnati 34, 4:25 left. Now it's a 4th and 1 at the Cincinnati 34. The Dolphins elect to kick a 51-yard field goal attempt. So this is Teddy Bridgewater comes to the game, makes a nice pass. They get it to 4th and 1. And then, interestingly, again, the second straight interesting 4th down for the Dolphins, they're like, yeah, we'll kick the field goal. It gets blocked. Three plays later, 2:58 left in the second quarter, Burrow to Higgins, beat single coverage, 59-yard touchdown passes, 14-6. The Dolphins do get it to 14-12 by the half. Again, the fourth down decisions are the theme of this game. Third quarter, Dolphins down 14-12 at this point. Bridgewater to Tyreek for 64 yards. They have a first and goal at the 5. Then they get a 3-yard run. Then no gain on a second down rush. Then an incomplete pass. And then fourth and goal at the 2 with 2:43 left in the third quarter, down 14-12. Will they go for it here? Nope. Sanders, 20-yard field goal to go up for the first time in the game, 15-14. Would turn out to be the only time in the game they would go up. Just a field goal fest. And, you know, at first I was like, well, I'm glad teams aren't allergic to field goals. But after several of these, you're like, what are we doing here? And then, of course, fourth quarter, Cincinnati, fourth and goal at the Miami 1. Bengals were stopped for no gain on third down. They opt for a 19-yard Evan McPherson field goal to go back up 17-15. That one was the most shocking of them all. Your quarterback is what, 6'5"? Yeah, no snake. We'll kick the 19-yarder. 17-15 Bengals. What year is this? What year are we watching? 1955? What, I don't. Okay. Then the key play of the game in terms of the outcome, Miami driving down 20-15 after a McPherson 57-yard field goal, because of course he was making that. That dude is incredible. Tucker Light. Second and 10 at the Miami, second and 10 at the Cincinnati 26, 3:17 left. Bridgewater picked by Von Bell, returned 46 yards. And five plays later, Burrow hits Hayden Hurst for 2 yards, 27-15. Katie Barr the door. Ball game for all intents and purposes. Bengals hold on for that same score victory, 27-15. Tua, 8-14 for 110 before he was knocked out of the game. No touchdowns, one pick, sack once. Bridgewater in relief, 14-23 for 193, one touchdown, one pick. He was not sacked. Tyreek, 10-160 in his grudge match with Eli Apple. Joe Burrow on the winning side. Burrow was great, by the way. 20-31 for 287, two touchdowns, no picks. He was sacked once. T. Higgins, his big receiver on the night, 7-124 and a touchdown. And, of course, what's the stat that matters the most in any NFL box score? A two-turnover advantage for Cincinnati. Miami had two, including that big one on the pick from Von Bell off Bridgewater. Miami had two. Cincinnati had none. But, Matt, back to Tua. Because this is, you know, I don't think you can be human and watch that game last night without being super concerned about him as that game progressed. And this, of course, is on the heels, right, of 4 days earlier, him having to leave the game against the Buffalo Bills in what turned out to be a Miami win, had to leave it. Tua had two passes in that game. Tua left because at one point when he stood back up, he collapsed back. When we weren't guessing lines on Monday, and I mentioned that the Dolphins tagged it as a back injury, you heard me openly laughing about it. And we weren't the only ones, right? We're like, really, that's a back injury? Now, here's the thing about that people need to remember. It was called a back injury after the game, but the first report from the Dolphins was that it was a head injury. And that detail sort of gets lost in this. It's not going to be lost by the people who are investigating it seriously. So in the end, you know, again, when we found out that Tua had feeling in his extremities, and then when we found out, for goodness sakes, by the end of the game, he was traveling back with the team. And so by that time, we had all sort of shifted back into football mode to some degree. But for me, I think I speak for a lot of people, it was still like, yeah, the second half of that game was kind of a weird blur for me, because I was super concerned, as so many were, for Tua. And I am no doctor. I have not gone to medical school. I have not attended medical school. I just want to be a full disclosure about that. But you do have to wonder, if in fact it is two concussions in a 5-day span, which the Dolphins, again, are adamantly saying it wasn't. And they got to stick to that, I guess, at this point. But you can do serious long-term damage to a human being with that kind of head trauma, specifically with that short of a turnaround between them. And so I don't know. We're left to speculate at this point. All it is speculation for the Dolphins long term, who fall to 3-1 on the football field. No big deal, I guess. You wonder, when will we see Tua back at this point? When should we see Tua back? I'm not saying it's a career ender, but like, shouldn't he take some time off here? Like a good amount of time?
Absolutely, yeah.
I don't know about you, but obviously the most vivid image you're in, the one that's emblazoned in your brain from last night, is the fingers, right? I mean, I speak for all of us. I've watched football for decades. I've never seen that before. There was something when I was a kid. I was super young. But you know how when you're a kid, things make an impression on you. Tommy Kramer was the quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings. This will be for a certain age. And I want to say it was Jack Youngblood or Jim Youngblood or somebody slammed him to the turf in a Rams-Vikings game. And Kramer's body started to shake while he was on the ground. I remember, I don't know if I was 7 years old, 8 years old, whatever it was. And I was just like, oh, my God, right? Like I was just blown away by, like, oh, my God, what's happening to him? But the fingers thing, you said something off air, which was the more recent.
Anquan Boldin, when he was hit, when he was playing for the Cardinals and hit by the Jets. Yeah, when he dislocated his jaw, hands clenched up and everything. That's what it reminded me of. Yeah.
I had forgotten about that. But this was, I mean, the way that the fingers were contorted. I mean, my brother, who is a doctor, he was like, yeah, usually you see that with stroke victims, and obviously this is a stroke, but that's usually more reflective of that kind of thing. But anyway, it's we just Bengals win their second game in a 5-day span, but we all wish the best for Tua Tagovailoa, who, by the way, also the hip injury at Alabama. He's 24 years old. Can we think of another 24-year-old that has had this much happen to his body? Coming back with Dr. Bob and college football picks next on the Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. We get tweets at Beating the Book. This is from New York Mess 16. Didn't they flag number 92 of the Bengals for slamming the running back to the ground? The quarterback is perversely protected in today's game, so that was a bajillion percent a personal foul. He agrees with me on that one. Let's see. And on. We'll get some of these here afterwards. All right, let's talk some college football. Actually, let's talk some pro football, because he may have a pro football pick as well. Ladies and gentlemen, you can follow him at drbobsports, drbobsports.com. It's the great Dr. Bob Stoll, pioneer in predicting the outcomes of sporting events through predictive modeling. How you doing? He hates the word pioneer. I'm sorry, Bob. I did it again.
It just makes me seem old.
Okay. You are a...
How about cutting edge?
Cutting edge. Handicapper Dr. Bob. That's what we'll do. We'll put it on your graphic. Cutting edge.
Pioneer makes my math seem really old. My math is still fresh, Gil.
Oh, man. Okay.
Still beat me odds.
That's right. Cutting edge. TikToker Bob Stoll, everybody. All right, Bob. Real quick before we get to your college football plays, there was an NFL one you might want to slip in here, you said?
Yeah, you know, I like the under in the Green Bay-New England game. Obviously, Mac Jones is out. The metrics say that Hoyer is about 3.5 points worse than Jones. I just think this is one of those games that Bill Belichick knows his only chance of winning is limiting possessions. And I think it's just going to be try to possess the ball, with the ball control offense, maybe more running, whatever else. The offense isn't going to work, whatever he tries to do. And Green Bay's offense is obviously struggling. The receivers are terrible, and I think Belichick will come up with a plan to kind of – they play a lot of bend but don't break anyway over the years. And I think it's going to be one of those games where they're just going to hope that Green Bay makes mistakes, and they're going to limit what Green Bay can do, which is run the ball. And I think their offense is going to be super conservative. I played the under 41. I don't know what it is now. It might still be around at 40.5, so – I still like under 40 or higher in the Green Bay-New England game.
Okay, let's go to, we're showing 40.5. We're showing a 40 out here, so I'll shop around for the best number you can get on that if you choose to follow Bob on that. Let's go to college football. ACC clash between Wake Forest and Florida State at FSU. Florida State, well, actually, this is this one of the games that was moved? No, they kept it there, didn't they? 6.5-point favorite in terms of the in favor of the Seminoles here.
Yeah, you know, Wake Forest, I had a small play on Wake Forest last week as a home dog against Clemson, and that was mostly because I think Clemson's secondary is young and they're just not good, and I figured Wake Forest could move the ball through the air, which they did. You know, Sam Hartman averaged 10 yards a pass play last week and the overtime loss, and they covered the spread and scored a bunch of points. And I think Wake Forest is getting too much credit for being close with Clemson. I just don't think Clemson is an elite team anymore. So I think they're getting too much credit for that. Hartman is a great quarterback, no doubt about that, but you know, Demon Deacons don't run the ball well, and Florida State defends the pass very well. So far, the Seminoles have allowed just 5.0 yards per pass play to three FBS teams that would combine to average 6.4 yards per pass play against an average defense. So they've been about 1.5 yards per pass play better than an average team so far defending the pass. They'll slow down Hartman, and Wake Forest won't be able to run the ball. So I think FSU has an advantage in that situation. Overall, the Wake Forest offense and the Florida State defense are about a wash. The big advantage is when Florida State has the ball. Jordan Travis is better and better and better every single year. And this year he's completed 66% of his passes. He still throws the ball down the field. He hasn't chosen to run it much, and he hasn't needed to because he's been throwing the ball so well, but he can run if needed. But Travis is averaging 9.3 yards per pass play against the FBS defenses he's faced that are on average better than average. So he's had a great year so far, and Wake Forest has been just average defending the pass so far. So I expect Travis to have another good game, and Florida State, just based on their huge advantage with their offense against Wake Forest defense, which didn't play very well against a pretty mediocre Clemson attack last week. I just think that's such a huge edge for Florida State. And laying 7 points or less is a really good bet.
So agree with you about Clemson, by the way. I think that seems to be obvious to everyone watching them, that they are no longer among the elite, despite DJ having a good game this past week. Let's go from the ACC to the SEC. This is Texas A&M at Mississippi State. Now, Texas A&M, both teams, by the way, 3-1. I have no idea how Texas A&M is 3-1, quite frankly.
Yeah.
They tried to give Miami that game a couple weeks ago. Miami refused to take it. And then last week, they down 14-0 to Arkansas, and then get back in a tie with that fumble recovery lateral for a touchdown. Just win under just unbelievable circumstances. Mississippi State favored by 3 in the hook here.
Yeah, this is Mississippi State. A&M scored 14, their offense has scored 14 points, 14 points, and 17 points in three games against FBS opponents. And the FCS team that plays Sam Houston State has a terrible defense this year, and A&M only scored 31 points against them, which is bad. It gets worse for the Aggies now. Their best offensive player, Ainis Smith, is out. Smith has more than double the receiving yards of any of his teammates. He's averaged 12.1 yards per target and a 57% success rate. That is significantly better than the rest of the receivers on the team, who combined for 6.4 yards per target, about 6 yards less per target, the rest of the receivers that have to replace Smith's production. And the rest of the A&M receivers, 32% success rate compared to 57% for Smith, who got about double the targets. So the pass game is going to get even worse. Max Johnson, who took over a couple games ago for King, has been a little bit worse than King was, if you adjust for opponent's base. So I don't think I'll have any luck throwing against an elite Mississippi State pass defense. I mean, Bulldogs defense is playing lights out right now. They've allowed less than 5 yards of pass play to a collection of quarterbacks that would average about 7 yards per pass play against an average defensive team. Holding Memphis, Arizona, and LSU, who all have better-than-average passing games, to less than 5 yards per pass play is exceptionally good. I don't see how A&M is going to be able to throw the ball. A&M does have a good running attack, but the Bulldogs have a decent run defense, not great, not as good as their pass defense. A&M scored just 14 and 17 points against App State and Arkansas, who have mediocre run defenses. And the Bulldogs, without Smith to worry about, can put an extra man at the line of scrimmage, so their run defense is going to get better. I just don't see how A&M scores more than 14 points in this game. They've only averaged 15 points in three games against FBS teams, and now they're worse. And Mississippi State's the best defense that they've faced. So I think that's the problem. And, of course, A&M's strength is their defense, which is why they've won a few games. And Mississippi State's ball control pass attack should be able to score enough points, and they're going to have good field position because A&M's offense is going to be so bad. But I think it's a situation where Mississippi State is going to score somewhere in the 20s. They're going to control the ball, have good field position, get close to 400 yards of offense because how many plays they're going to run, and that should get them in the 20s. And A&M is probably going to be capped at around 14 points unless they get lucky again. So I like Mississippi State -4 or less is the best bet for me.
-4 or less, and you can get less on Mississippi State.
Yeah, 3.5 at some books, 4 at some books, yeah.
Okay, so FSU and Mississippi State. Let's go back to the NFL for a second because we talk about survivor pools a lot. There's a huge one here in town. You do something called the loser pool, right? A loser's pool, which is basically survivor but the opposite direction. Are you in one this year and are you still alive?
No, I'm not. I'm a loser in the loser's pool.
You're a winner in the loser's pool, which is not a good thing.
Yeah, you know, I got knocked out the first week with the Colts against Houston, and then you could re-up for double the entry fee. I'm like, you know what? I'm game. I had Houston against Indy the first week. I'm sorry, not the other way around. Houston, who I picked to lose, who beat the Colts the first week. I re-upped and lost again just this last week.
So, who'd you lose on last week? Who'd you lose on this week?
Not so good. Last week I lost with them, Jacksonville.
Oh man,
Jacksonville lose, and I picked it before I knew Herbert was potentially out. I'm like, he's going to play, and he played terrible.
based on that, I'm not sure if you're the guy to ask this anymore. But if you were, let's just say you were in it this week, it's hard to know who everybody has available, right? But let's just say you had the entire pool of teams available. Who would you pick this week as your loser in loser's pool?
Well, the thing is, this is a gigantic pool, so you have to pick good teams to lose.
Right.
And I thought Jacksonville, they're a pretty good team this year, so I picked them, but that didn't work last week. It's a tough week this week. You don't want to take Houston to lose because they're a bad team, and who knows the structures. Same with, Seattle. You don't want to pick them to lose because they're a bad team. If you're in a big pool, in a loser's pool, you want to pick a good team to lose. It might be Jacksonville again.
Yeah, because they're playing Philly, right.
Yes.
Most people listening to this who are, used to survivor pools are listening to this and their brain is frazzled by it because you have to like completely turn your thinking around. Teams, it's I love all these vehicles to bet on the NFL. Bob, we got to run. We appreciate it. Thanks for the picks, man.
All right. Good luck. Y'all this week.
Bob Stoll, everybody, at drbobsports on Twitter, drbobsports.com, on the World Wide Web. Coming back with Paul Carr, Premier League picks. And he's a Dolphins fan. He's got thoughts. Coming up, Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The NHL season is almost here, and our hockey betting experts are ready for all the action. The VSiN Hockey Season Prep Guide is available now with strategies and best bets for the season ahead. Get in-depth analysis from our hockey experts, including Andy McNeil, though Andy says, I defy you to find another expert there besides me on that. Maybe he's just referring to the fact that he's the only one on there is what he's saying. With predictions for teams and players, win totals, daily betting tips, season-long trends to watch, plus three things every new NHL bettor should know. This guide's a must-have with key insights and data for both avid hockey bettors and those new to the sport. Give yourself an edge this season to get the VSiN Hockey Season Prep Guide by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Cannot wait for that to come out. Andy's been kind enough to join us a couple times already this week to preview a couple divisions. He will be back to preview the remaining two, the Atlantic and the Metropolitan, here on Numbers Game here before the hockey season begins and before the VSiN Hockey Season Prep Guide comes out. It's Gil Alexander. We get tweets at Beanie the Book. Always appreciate everybody chiming in. This is from Matt Grissom. He says, I'm not a doctor, but a buddy told me that it's a response, talking about Tua now, called fencing. Yeah, that's the term they're throwing out. With Tua's hands, quote, when a person experiences an impact that's strong enough to cause traumatic brain injury, such as a concussion, their arms often go into an unnatural position. I didn't use the term fencing because I had asked my brother about it. He's like, I've never heard that word in my life. So maybe
I've never heard of it either.
And he's a doctor. So he was like, I've never heard it in my life. So maybe he's just not, he doesn't know the neurological term for it. Sam Ginsberg, talking about what Dr. Bob was just saying. How you doing, Sam Ginsberg from Pittsburgh, PA? He said, I've been running a loser's pool for probably the last 10 years. We call it the, you ready? You guess, what do they call it? The cesspool. See what he did there? Nice job, Sam Ginsberg. Paul Carr joins us, ladies and gentlemen, from Topeka, Kansas. He is the host of the Expected Value podcast and, of course, works at True Media Networks. Used to be at ESPN back in the day. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm good, except I can't play Survivor this week. I'm very sad about it.
You're out.
I'm out. You had the Chiefs.
Yeah.
and their special teams were a disaster. And I mean, despite all that, they really still should have won the game. But yeah, the only consolation I have is my pool, which about 20 people have been doing it for 20 years. My dad won after a whole, 3 weeks. So it's over.
There you go, Mr. Carr.
Good job, Dad.
There you go. Tell your dad what's up. Listen, you see, I don't know if you heard this on the Megapod last week. And by the way, we had a great Megapod yesterday with Adam Chernoff, Todd, Jeff, and I. But Jeff Parlay had asked last week, again, I had mentioned this before on the Megapod, he was like, what do you think is a bigger loss? Keenan Allen being out for the Chargers or Harrison Butker being out for the Chiefs? Now, he knows me well enough to know that before he could even finish the sentence, I was going to be like, Butker, we don't talk about field goal kickers enough. Yeah. By the way, the answer was that both were a big loss, right? But that I would argue that Butker was the bigger deal because it colored that whole game. And what you're saying about their special teams, like, I mean, it sort of played out that way.
Yeah, their special teams EPA, expected points added, basically how many points special teams cost them based on, each individual play and how many points that is worth, et cetera. It was about minus 17 last week, which is the worst the Chiefs have had in a game since 2000. It's the worst for any Dave Tobe, their special teams coach, who's very good, well-regarded. The worst that he's had in any game in his 20-year NFL career. So between, the muffed kick, missed field goal, missed extra point, failed attempt on the fake punt, all that, it added up to minus 17 points, which obviously cost them the game.
Yeah. Laugh at me all you will, those who laugh at me when I said Harrison Butker. By the way, I have no idea if anybody laughed. I'm just trying to stir something up.
That's right.
All right. Now, the other thing is you are a Miami Dolphins fan. The Dolphins fall to 3-1 last night, 27-15 loss to the Bengals. We talked, obviously, about the strange fourth and short decisions left and right from Mike McDaniel and Zach Taylor. I was like, what year is this? What are we watching? Yeah. Particularly the last one for the Bengals when they're fourth and goal at the doorstep, and you're really not going to just throw Burrow across the line. Nope. Didn't end up costing them, obviously, in the end, but it was so bizarre. And then, of course, the two injury marring it all. What is your, as a Dolphins fan, like, what's your big takeaway from that from a football perspective and from a Tua perspective?
Yeah, I mean, from a big picture football perspective, look, the Dolphins are 3-1 after four games, which included games against the Bills. Three playoff caliber teams, and you beat the Patriots, who are kind of arch nemesis. So you told me before the season, 3-1 after four games, ecstatic, especially with the Jets, Vikings, Steelers, I think, are the next three. So not a terrible schedule coming up. So you're happy overall with where they're at. It felt like a missed opportunity though last night, hanging around, and the Tua cloud is just hanging over everything. There's so much speculation. Like, we don't know anything about anything really that's gone on for the last week. It obviously doesn't look good from a procedural or a medical standpoint, but I just hope Tua's okay, both from a personal standpoint and a football standpoint.
Yeah, I don't want to listen. Thank goodness we he has feeling in his extremities. He went back with the team. So we think that the worst possible, circumstances is behind us. But I did go in my head, right? I went in some point, your head went to, what if something really, really serious and permanent had to happen to this kid?
Yep.
And what would that have done to the NFL? Like, I know we're like, the NFL would have gone on another. Ron Flatter used to be on this network, right? Ron Flatter texted me, he goes, it would have brought the NFL to its knees. That was what he said.
Yeah.
Totally
overhaul how, they've added a lot of concussion protocol in the last few years, which is good. Could get a lot different. You lose a star quarterback like that on a national TV game, especially. Yeah, it could change a lot of stuff. We don't know.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness. We hope again. Please, Dolphins, take precautions. Because RG3 had great tweets about it. It's like, it was a lesson in how the team had to, needs to be protected by the league. And then how the league also let them down as well in the whole process of it all. So RG3 had some really good tweets on it. All right, to the Premier League. There's no real artful way to transition from that, but to the Premier League, the world's football, global football. How's your season going so far? Where are we?
Good. I didn't look at the exact record, but it's up like 2 units so far in the season, 12-9, something to that effect.
All right, and better than being 9-12, 12-9. Okay. You have a 3-pack. Where do we start?
I do. We're starting with one of the big games of the weekend, early tomorrow morning, Arsenal-Tottenham, North London Derby, always a fun one. I like the draw on this one at plus 270. It just Arsenal, the way they're going to play, they're going to want to have most of the ball, but what they haven't shown an ability to do all season is put games away. They're really not that great when they're up a goal at just kind of strangling the life out of a game. And Tottenham's really good on the counterattack. Each team has scored in all of their games this year, so I think we'll see at least a goal apiece. Tottenham's defense hasn't been great. Arsenal's defense hasn't been great, especially against better teams. So it just feels a lot like a draw to me, 1-1, 2-2 type of game. Plus 270, I think I saw it at plus 275 some places this morning. So I like the draw on this one. It should be a pretty fun one. I think there'll be goals. I think we get a draw.
Always fun to root for the draw, by the way. If you're into such things, I should say.
I hate rooting for the draw. It's just there's zero chance that you're comfortable until the final whistle, you know?
That's
right. You take a team to win, they can be up two or three goals and you can coast home. Both teams to score can be over in 10 minutes. A draw, you have to endure 90 minutes of torture.
That's very true. There is no moment of comfort with a draw.
Nope.
The payout reflects that, though, I suppose.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. You get good prices on it.
Arsenal, by the way, the number one team in the Premier League through seven matches anyway, a point lead over both Man City and the side they're playing, Tottenham. So this obviously has implications as early as it is in the Premier League season, 38 games entirely. All right, we have a total as well. What do you like?
Total, also Saturday. Fulham-Newcastle, I'm going over 2.5. I got this at minus 105. It's probably more like 110, 115 now, which I'd still play. Fulham games overall have had the most expected goals of any team in the Premier League this season. They're newly promoted. Their defense is okay, but a little shaky. But they've shown a willingness to go for it in the attack, and that's resulted in lots of chances for both teams. They give up good shots. Newcastle's games, I think, are eighth in total expected goals this season, so their games have been a little bit open as well. Lots of shots by both teams. And Fulham's got Alexander Mitrovic, who sounds kind of like an Eastern European henchman, and that's kind of what he plays like too. You know, he's this big, brawny henchman. Forward. Yeah, he's a big, brawny forward. He's got 6 goals in 7 games this year. He scored 4 times for Serbia in the international break last week. He's been kind of the fulcrum of that attack up top. So he plays every bit like his name and look sounds. But he and Fulham have just generated goals one way or the other this season. So I like over 2.5 at minus 105.
Henchman. How does one become a henchman? By the way, the definition of a henchman, and yes, I looked it up, because I went, a faithful follower or political supporter, especially one prepared to engage in crime or dishonest practices by way of service.
There you go.
Looks like a Eastern European henchman. All right.
Google Alexander Mitrovic. It looks every bit the Serbian that you would expect him to be.
Then you're on Man City against Man U. You like Man City here.
Yeah, here's your other big game of the weekend. Man City, Manchester United. The Manchester Derby is always fun. This is my always hot take the better team approach. So I'll lay one goal, Man City -1. I got even money on this, which I think is pretty good. City's played 6 Premier League games this season. 4 of them have been multiple goal wins. Newcastle 21-12 in a draw, and they drew against Aston Villa, outshooting them 13-3. So City has been every bit the dominant team we kind of expected them to be. I think even more dominant than we expected. United's defense isn't there yet. They're allowing a lot of shots, double digits in all 6 games. And I have to point this out. Erling Haaland is -250 to score a goal in some places. That's just nuts.
Wow. -250.
You can get it like -175, which honestly isn't terrible.
To score a goal.
Yeah, so 70% he's going to score the goal. That's how good he's been since joining Man City.
Arsenal Tottenham draw. Fulham Newcastle over 2.5. Man City giving up the goal versus Man U. -1 versus Man U. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it as always.
You bet. Have a good weekend, Gil.
You too. Paul Carr, everybody. At Paul Carr, C-A-R-R, on Twitter. Coming back with Adam Burke. College football and pro football picks next.
Sports Betting Network.
Attention, BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do. Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when you sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account. Click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement at BetMGM and get a $50 bonus. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. promotions. It must be 21 years of age or older to wager. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable site credit. Site credit expires in 30 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi and Nevada. It's Gil Alexander, still to come on the show, of course. Spanky in studio. Final two segments of the show. The creator of Spank Odds, among other things. The founder and creator of Bet Bash and Bet Bash 2. And perhaps Bet Bash 3. We'll talk to him about all that when he's in studio with us later. Thrilled to have him coming on. And, of course, we'll get Chris Felik on in here in the next hour. Adam Burke standing by as well. Pro tip of the hour, by the way, Matt Santos. Pro tip of the hour. It has to do with what Dr. Bob was saying. If you're in a loser's pool, which he is in Survivor, in football, he's in a loser's pool. So it's the odd sort of, you twist your brain around, you think the opposite way that you would in a Survivor pool. You're looking for losers to advance. The object, from his perspective, what he was saying, is to pick good teams because you know most people are going to take the obvious bad teams to survive. He's trying to win. And so when playing Survivor pools, remember, you have to be willing to take a risk and play the teams you know the most. You have to play the teams that you know that most of the pool is not going to be willing to play. For example, the Packers this week will most likely be the single most popular play, and I would even argue will have a massive percentage of remaining Survivor plays. So are you trying to survive or are you trying to win? If I told you right now, hey, look, I know you don't think the Packers are going to lose, but they're going to. And in fact, I'm coming to you from the future and they did. Would you still be okay that you took the Packers? Play to win, not just to survive. It's your pro tip of the hour. Searchable at vsin.com. And remember, our pro tips are available at vsin.com. 20 a day. Right here at the network. I've done the math. Gil Alexander, Adam Burke joins us once again, which is kind enough to do as many Fridays as he can, of course. He is the glue that holds this network together, does the great baseball previews, knows his college football, knows his pro football, knows multiple sports. Adam, thrilled to have you, man. How you doing?
I'm good, and I just want to say that I will be bringing back the daily article for the playoffs. It's something that I stopped heading into football season just because, I mean, you and I know that football rules everything here in this business, but I am bringing back the daily article for the playoffs, which kick off, I believe, October 6th or 7th, so looking forward to that.
Nice. Looking forward to that as well. Okay, so before we get to football, real quick, you're a Guardians guy. Guardians look like they're going to play. I mean, we still don't know, right? It could be the Rays. It could be the Mariners. Will they be favorites in both of those series, and by how much, if so?
Well, that's a good question, because, I mean, by virtue of winning the Central Division, they will be at home, so yep. At least there is that. So, you know, obviously Seattle would have a long trip in, and look, I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know how many people are actually believers in this team, because the offense is so limited, and a lot of times we do see favoritism, you know, in the playoffs towards really good offensive teams, unless they have elite pitching, in which case, you know, the teams that have elite pitching are going to be favored. I wouldn't call the Guardians pitching elite, and obviously their offensive profile is very, very different from what we usually see out of teams. I think they'd be a dog to anybody that they would face in the wild card round, despite being at home. But I'll say this, I think we kind of saw a preview of what to expect from them in the playoffs with the last couple of games against the Rays. Tight, very low-scoring games. Actually, all three games, really. We had some extra inning runs in the first one. They'll probably be kind of an under-juggernaut in the playoffs for as long as they're in it because their offense is very limited and their run prevention skills are very, very good.
All right, let's note that. Under-juggernaut for the Guardians of the MLB postseason. Of course, that Braves-Mets series, the National League, for the National League East, ostensibly begins tonight with Fried versus DeGrom and the Mets -120 favorites at Atlanta. Huge, huge baseball tonight. All right, college football. Let's start there. What you got?
Yeah, I just want to mention real quick with that Mets and Braves series.
Please.
I mean, if the Mets don't win that division, it puts a significant dent into their World Series chances because then they'd have to burn DeGrom and Scherzer at least in that wild card round.
That's right.
And, you know, then it'd be something that doesn't really set them up well for the division series. So that is a massive series for them and a massive series for their World Series chances as well. As far as college football goes, I like to play tonight and, you know, there are still some 2.5s out there, and in fact, seeing a few more of them than we saw yesterday afternoon, but I like Washington tonight on the road against UCLA. The Washington's played a much tougher schedule to this point than UCLA has. The Bruins have played the 162nd ranked schedule, according to Sagarin, whereas Washington's at least played a couple of decent teams in Michigan State and Stanford. Washington with Kalen DeBoer at the helm. The offense is now capable of matching up alongside the defense. This was a defense last year that was 18th in yards per play allowed. So now that they've got an offense, now that they've got a guy in DeBoer who's had success everywhere he's been, whether that's as an OC or a head coach, I think tonight is the night that Washington kind of makes a statement, and anybody who's left sleeping on the Huskies is going to stop doing that. So I like Washington laying that short number of 2.5 tonight in L.A.
Yeah, some threes out there, but some 2.5s, as you said, still available for UW and Michael Penix on this one. Okay, so what about tomorrow, college football?
Yeah, one of the games in the early window, I like Illinois getting 7 against Wisconsin. I mean, we haven't seen anything from Wisconsin that would suggest that they can play well enough to cover this big of a number against a fellow Power 5 opponent. They've played 2 of them. Illinois is not Ohio State, but Wisconsin was completely overmatched in that game. And they lost at home to Washington State, who's certainly better than expected. But I would have had Illinois and Washington State power rated pretty evenly, or maybe Illinois a little bit better coming into the season. So that's a pretty ugly loss for Wisconsin. These are two teams that play a very similar brand of football. They want to run it. They want to be physical. They want to play defense. To me, I don't think that really warrants Wisconsin being as big as a 7-point favorite here, nor do I think it helps Wisconsin's chances of covering the spread. I also think Illinois may be better at the quarterback position with Tommy DeVito as opposed to Graham Mertz for the Badgers. So I took the 7 with Wisconsin, and honestly, an upset would not shock me here in this early window.
You took the 7 with Illinois. With the,
excuse me. Yeah.
No problem. Yeah. Just want to clarify. Total
it's
is,
still early.
It's still early. I understand. Total 44, so the total sort of lends to your side of things as well with that big of a spread. Anything else college-wise before we get to the pros?
Yeah, I got a couple. Actually, I'm involved in a couple of games with the service academies here this weekend. I like Army laying the 7.5 against Georgia State. We're seeing a few more 8s kind of pop up here today. These two teams played last year in week 1, and Army won 43-10 on the road. And the thing about playing the triple option is the more time you have to prepare, the better off you're expected to be. But when Georgia State had all kinds of time last year, they gave up 43 points, and Army had the ball for over 42 minutes, I think, in that game. Now, Georgia State is playing this in the middle of conference play. They're going to West Point. They're facing an Army team off a bye. And Georgia State also plays their rival, Georgia Southern, next week. So I think this is a really, really awful spot for Georgia State. So I laid the 7.5 with Army. And I actually played the over in Navy and Air Force, which I know Service Academy overs are very, very terrifying. But this one's up to 38, 38.5 out there. These two teams, since 1999, only 3 of these head-to-head meetings have failed to get to 40 points, and this totals 38, 38.5. This is not Army-Navy. Air Force is a very dynamic offensive team. So I took the over 38 in that one and kind of lean with Air Force minus the 14 as well.
Are you in Millions or Survivor in the NFL?
I am in Survivor.
Oh, you are.
I still have one alive.
There you go. How many did you start with?
2.
So nice. Okay.
I had the Broncos in week 1, which is still devastating.
Man, I know. Who do you think you're playing this week, you know?
Well, I think I am going to shy away from Green Bay for some of the reasons that you talked about there at the top of the segment. I want to play Detroit. I really want to play Detroit.
So many injuries, yeah.
It's challenging with the injury report, especially with DeAndre Swift being out. Also, as somebody who's a fan of historically disappointing teams, all the Cleveland teams, relying on the Lions to do anything is a very scary proposition. But I think Seattle may be the worst team in the NFL or very close to it.
Yeah.
So, I feel like I can take Green Bay at other junctures here in the contest. I can't take Detroit really at any other point. And I think people are feeling that way about the Steelers as well, where this is about the only time you can take Pittsburgh. So, yeah. Kind of thinking between those two teams right now.
Adam, that phrase is so disappointing. It's so heartbreaking. You're like, as a fan of historically disappointing teams, like it's just so, I'm so sorry, man. I want to give you a hug. All right, what's your favorite bet against the number this week at the NFL is? We have about 30 seconds.
Favorite total, by the way, is Cleveland and Atlanta over. I think both of those teams have good success moving the football. But as far as an ATS play, I took Arizona plus 1.5, and now I see that they're even favored at some places.
Yep.
I'm not a believer in the Panthers at all whatsoever. The Cardinals' secondary is terrible, but so is Baker Mayfield. So I don't think that they can exploit that weakness, and I think that Arizona's played a really challenging schedule here so far. So I like them laying getting a short number on the road.
I had them favored in guessing lines on Monday, and they laughed. Adam, they laughed. I don't know if they laughed. I'm just saying. Thank you, Adam. Appreciate it as always, man.
Absolutely. You'll have a good one.
You too. Adam Burke at Skating Tripods. One of the iconic Twitter handles of all time right there. We'll come back. Chris Velika, the Bear from ESPN, College and Pro Football next.